So the talk is about consciousness and mind body or nama rupa, and it's important to keep this expressing and understanding this message that we build our life from every experience, small experiences, moment by moment. We gather them together and call it my life. But it's my life is built from small experiences, one leading to the next, leading to the next. And because of the experience that was, therefore the experience of now. We build patterns of who we are and what we experience according to what was, the karma of what was. So we come into this moment full of patterns and the shape of our life and intentions, and the word imprint, how would you say it in Hebrew? Hatba'a. It's imprinted like a coin, is a stamp, stamped out, and these patterns make us who we are. So we wake up every morning the same person pretty well, just because of the pattern we went to sleep. Alavai that we can't wake up in the morning and think, ah. I'm not myself. I can be anybody or anything. Or the whole universe is at my feet. It's open. And maybe it happens to you sometimes. Maybe it happens for a very short time when we wake up in the morning, like half a minute when we suddenly think, I don't know who I am. And if we're not frightened, wonderful. I don't have to be Stephen anymore. What a liberation. So we know the world because of all these patterns and the imprint, and we call that reality. That's a big problem, because it's not reality. We don't know really what is reality. We just say reality is what we learnt to call reality. A philosopher, Heidegger, once said that we forget 99.9999% of all the experiences that we have every day, and that 0.0001% we call reality. So it's basically we're busy with trying to be happy and comfortable, and that creates the patterns and the tendencies and the sankharas. But in reality, there isn't a world that. When we define the world, we don't know really what we're doing. Wittgenstein said sometime, the world is what the case is. In other words, ha'olam zeh ha'inyan, ma she'anachnu omrim, zeh ha'inyan zeh ha'olam. The case is inyan. So, ma mit'anen otanu, what we're interested in, and we that's the world. We call it the world. There isn't a world that we know. The world is what the case is, what we say we're interested in. So the pattern that we talked about of paticca-samuppada just shows that there are chains or there are relationships going on, everything is dynamic, one thing leading to the other, and it, and that this dynamic, free set of conditions, we close it, we fix in there the world, and we don't notice how dynamic and free everything really is. If we are serious about awakening, we will begin to notice this, how dynamic everything really is. When we do that, we have to leave behind the definitions, the descriptions, the belief that the world is like that. We want to leave it behind, but we can't. Especially if it's something difficult for us, or deep imprint, stuck. For example, a fear that we have, or anxiety, or an irritation or anger, something with emotion. We feel it so heavy, so stuck, so solid, we can't find our way through it. But even there, if we look carefully, it's a construction that is formed and disappears. It's formed and disappears again and again and again. It formed and disappears. It just keeps happening again and again because we gave it interest and importance. That's all. But it doesn't have reality. The reality is the case, the inyan. That's reality. So the Buddha pointed to the unconditioned, the place or the state or the awareness or the understanding that everything is based on conditions. And if you really go there, you're beyond conditions. There is the unconditioned. And this place is a place where everything cools down. Nibbana is cooling. Everything cools down. Everything slows down. We are not in the rush for building the world all the time. The pressure to build the world all the time. That cools down. That's Nibbana. And the only thing you can say about the world is tathāta in the Pali, which is kaha, kahut, kaha ze. That's the only thing you can say. You cannot anymore say, well, it's this, like my problem. It's just. So it still leaves the question of us and the world, it leaves it quite open and problematic for us. And if things are just kahaze, so what are they? It still leaves us with the issue. And one way we can look at it is just to sense that everything is a potential. This freedom is in the form of a potential, that every possibility is there. We are channeled into a channel, usually, by sankharas, by conditioning. But there is just potential, that this moment can be fresh and new and unexpected, after aught, as we said, and open, and just a potential. What we put in it is our story, but there is just a constant potential. And as I said before, it's a bit like quantum physics, where reality is potential. But as soon as you look at it, you make it into something. So there isn't actually a reality that you could say separate from the observer, the person looking. We make the world as we look at it, according to the filter with which we look. According to the glasses we have, that's the world. But the world is potential, it's just open and free. And if we really go, keep going there again and again, and that's why we meditate, we will experience more and more the basic freedom that we have for the next moment to be free, and for us to be free in the next moment, because it's the truth. It's just that we don't notice that truth. So, sankharas we discussed, and sankharas are the forms, the pattern, the imprint. What was the Hebrew word again? Hatba'a, tavniyot, that with which arise we arrive in the present with all of that, and it's a tendency for things to have a shape, to have a form, to keep arising as forms, as structure. And it's basically the structure that which is what's interesting for us, what we want, what we're afraid of, what we are busy with. That's the structure. And that's the sankharas, and that's the conditioning. But, they need us to believe in them. It's very hard it's quite hard to accept that my patterns and my issues and my difficulties are only there because I believe in them. I mean, because we so much think they're real, and they are totally real. But they're real because we gave them power, not because they're real, but in their nature. And a lot of the practice that we're doing is undoing sankharas by seeing the truth that they're not real. And if we look at, for example, an emotion which seems very strong, like anger, and it's a sankhara that every time the neighbor turns on the television so loud and disturbs me, and he's a mamzer that lives next door, and so on, and they get angry every time. But actually, if we look at it, it's a response to something that we have invested in, allowed to disturb us. We're in a pattern of disturbance, and there is duality in it. There's me, and there is the neighbor, and there is this tugubatiyut, this response. And if we look at it carefully, it all breaks down. There is, what is the anger? It's an emotion, a feeling in the belly, it's a thought, it's a image of the person, the heart beating, it's feelings and thoughts, and it's all. So we break it down, it isn't really anger anymore. It isn't, and that's what we do when we practice. We look at things and we see that they're not really a thing. A pain in the back, when we look at it carefully, is made of many, many things. As the Buddha said, everything is compound, all sankharas are compounded, are made of other things. Everything is made of other things. And the example in the texts is a mukav, yeah. Everything is made of other things. They're made up of many things. In the text, the example of a chariot is given, of a merkava, or of a car. That we say it's a car, but if you look at it, okay, let's take off the wheels, let's take off the seats, let's take off the bit of the body. Is it still a car? Well, maybe. I'm not sure. So let's take off this bit and this bit and this bit. Is it still a car? I'm not sure anymore. The car is a habit. But if we look at it more carefully, it's made up of many things. And only when all those things are together, we say, it's a car. It's a chariot in the traditional text. A chariot, we call it, it's a convention. Same with an anger. Same with the fear. Same with any sankhara. It's a convention. It's something that we believe in. So we call it this. We call it a problem. We call it an issue. We call it whatever. So that's sankharas. And there's the suffering. It comes in chains, sharsharat. The sankhara of yesterday becomes the sankhara of today. It comes in chains of thought, papancha, because I think about the neighbor, so I think about him again, and then I think about him again, and then it comes, because I thought now, then the next thought is the same, and the next thought is the same. A boring chain of thoughts all going in the same direction, each thought bringing its brother and sister. And you think, oh, for God's sake, shut up, mind. What are you doing? Leave me alone. And the mind is going, ha, 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 ha. I'm bringing my brothers and friends to the party. They're all going to do the same thing. So sankharas are chains of imprints that make the world, that make us and the world. And they make consciousness. So there is a big issue. How is it that sankharas make consciousness? Well, the truth is they don't really make consciousness. They define it. And when we look at those relationships, then again, we said it before, they're not causative relationships. It's not that one leads to another. Because of X kamut shel sankharas, so you have that consciousness. Its consciousness is formed by, is influenced, formed by sankharas. In the practice, what we did just now in the meditation was an example. We have a consciousness of being, of just basic awareness. Up comes a thought and it pulls consciousness. It pulls consciousness in a direction. And then consciousness feels very solid. It's like, I know the neighbor with a TV and I don't like it. Consciousness goes there. Consciousness is empty. It doesn't, it's empty. It's like water. It goes, just like the image of the water in the sutta that, Upanishad sutta that Leela read yesterday. Consciousness goes where we invite it to go. So if we, have a thought, like, don't like this, consciousness goes there. And then it begins to think, oh, no, I don't like this, no good, this is not good for me, this is a problem. Consciousness rushes there very fast. We can't stop it. It is captured. Can you say that word for Shani, to capture? Lakud. Consciousness is captured by the forms of sankhara. And that's what this connection is about. So, it's like consciousness has, again, imprinted. With our tfusim, with our patterns, it's channeled. The example in the book of Paiuto that I sent around a couple of paragraphs, is of a foot. He uses an example of a football match, the Mishkaka Kadoregel. So you go into the football match, and the whole world becomes a football match. Your consciousness is totally devoted there. You watch the ball all the time. When someone wins, has a goal, you go, "Wah!" If someone doesn't have a, if the opposite side has a goal, you go, "Oh!" And you're caught in the atmosphere, and everyone is with you, and you're all, it's like one, when you watch football matches on TV, you see 500 people, 1,000 people, they all go, the same thing, they all go, "Wah!" And they all go, "Whoa!" It's like the consciousness is captured by the context. The context is a football match, and everything goes there. The body is there, so you go "wah" with your body. Ha! The mind goes there. You watch the ball. You want the emotions go there. You want your side to win. Everything is your in consciousness is entirely bought by that particular sankhara called football match. So awareness is always channeled, and it goes into states of mind, it goes into thought, it goes into feelings with emotion, with hormones, with the body. You can see it on a baby. The baby, the consciousness is pretty free. But the baby learns. So we tell the baby, "Do this, do that, do that." And you see the consciousness is learning to know what it knows, to understand, to make forms. And the baby then grows up and there is forms. And what is interesting is the consciousness is hungry for form. The consciousness can't exist without form in a way. It doesn't want to be free. The consciousness runs to form. Why is that? Why is the consciousness so hungry for form? And this is again in the Buddhist, the wisdom of the Buddhist language is like that. The consciousness is hungry for form. And you see it on a baby. The baby, you can't say, "You know, I wish it could," to say to a child, "Oh, stop, stop, stop. You're leading to dukkha, you're going to dukkha, just stop growing up and don't learn anything and hold on, then just stay where you are." The baby will grow anyway, and the baby will go and make the same mistakes that we make, because samsara rolls on life after life. It's sankharas, it's vidyuk sankhara. Sankhara is not, we can't just stop it so easily. And so consciousness goes into form. I like the image, Dafka, someone mentioned, maybe you mentioned Pesach, right? And it's a nice image of this, because Yitziat Mitzrayim is really exit from suffering. It's going out from pressure. The Am Yisrael, the children of Israel, were under pressure. And pressure, control. And where do they go? To the Midbar. Midbar in the Kabbalistic tradition is consciousness. Is the word for Midbar is used as the word for consciousness. And what happened was, they went into the Midbar, but they were so loaded with their past sankharas that they needed 40 years to wander about in the Midbar, to get free of all those sankharas of Egypt, of Mitzrayim, that they are carrying. Their image of themselves, it says in the text, that they had to die. One generation had to die, because they were so loaded with sankharas from what they were suffering in Egypt, the Mitzrayim. They had to be free, and they took a generation, at least, and to drop things, to drop their sense of being a slave, and to drop also, you know, many other things. So Midbar, they went into the wilderness, then this is an image of freeing ourselves from sankharas, going into the wilderness, into the Midbar, to clean up. So most of this is on the level, we can understand it on the level of a moment of experience, rega echad, which carries with it the weight or the pressure of sankhara. You can understand it also even in the realm of the creation of a human being, because all this path, this is used as a kind of a template, as a pattern for reality in the Buddhist world. The whole paticca-samuppada is a kind of understanding of reality on many, many levels. So you can also look at it on the level of the creation of a baby, through many lives. But what happens in the creation of a baby? Consciousness is pulled into the fetus. Consciousness arrives in the fetus, the ubar, or the set, or the ta'im, or the egg. Consciousness is pulled down, or pulled in, or collected from the unknown into the new being. And it's a power that something is pulling consciousness, something is collecting it. What's collecting it? Sankhara, form, being. New life is being, things are happening, and they collect consciousness, and all of a sudden the baby is wanting to be born. It's a process. It wants to be born, the baby. So the whole chain carries on. I was kind of had this rather amusing image that actually what is born from the mother, from the womb, is two things, not one. One is a baby, and the other is a placenta, the shilia. Two things are born. One we throw in the rubbish bin, and the other one we say, "Ooh, this baby." It's amazing. Why? Because consciousness has gone to one, but not to the other. So the consciousness went to the went to the baby. So, "Ooh," and the consciousness didn't go to the shilia. We throw that in the rubbish bin. It's crazy.
Try doing the other way around.
No, I wouldn't. So consciousness in a way is hungry for form in the moment or in the birth of a child. I've had experiences in my own life of kind of dying, I would say, of kind of not being in the world of form, a kind of meditative experiences. And there was one time I remember, which lasted quite a long time, when I kind of died. And it was blissful, I can tell you. Don't worry about dying. Don't worry about dying. And then I remember that it was very blissful, and then I had a thought arose. I must tell someone about this. And boom, I was back. I thought, oh shit, born again, going around this cycle of paticca-samuppada, here I am again. Awakening is a place of not being stuck to form, of consciousness not being in form, tied to form, consciousness being free. Consciousness can be free in many ways. There is one of the most beautiful texts that I know in the Buddhist teaching is in the Sutta Nipata. And someone comes to the Buddha and says, how do you know, with what do you know an awakened person? In what way do you know an awakened person? And the Buddha said, an awakened person is unfindable. You can't find them. You can't know them. There's no way you can find them. You can look at them, but you're not going to find them. Derech agav, besograim. One time a Dharma teacher came to teach in my house in Kleel. And we were sitting in my kitchen talking, and my wife Rachel was there. And afterwards, we were talking about him, and she said, you know, when I look in his eyes, it looks like kvisa beruach, washing on the line, waving in the wind. It's a beautiful image, but did I say it right in Hebrew? Kvisa v'chenadned beruach, in the eyes. Can't find. He's not... Anyway, so the person in this text said, what does that mean? I don't understand it. And he said, when a person is awakened, then that person is no longer in the place of description, of definition. And awakening doesn't have any labels anymore, or descriptions anymore that can describe it. And the person is undescribable. So you can't find them with any normal way of looking or defining. And it's a way of just expressing this sense that consciousness without a form is released. And there's another beautiful text in the tradition. And someone asked the Buddha, the Buddha asked somebody, in trying to illustrate this point, the Buddha asked a monk, he said, if light comes through the window, like here, light is coming through the window, we know light because it's landing on the carpet and the wall, right? The light is hitting the wall we actually don't see the light in the air. We see it only because it's lighting up the carpet. Can we see the light in the air? No. We only see it by what it touches. So the Buddha said, tell me, if there's no wall, what would the light from the window light up? And the monk said, well, the earth behind the wall. So... the Buddha said, if there's no earth, well, water behind the earth. And if there's no water, well, nothing. It wouldn't light up anything. So in other words, consciousness and the language used, although it's translated to English, so I don't know exactly what the Pali word it would be, but the language used is that consciousness, light needs a surface. Would you explain that to the surface? Mishtah. So light needs a surface, and then we know light. Without a surface, we will not know the light. The light is released, actually. It's just free. It's just gone. It's just there, but it's gone. It's free. It's gone. And this is not theoretical. It may seem philosophical, theoretical, but it is very much not. It is part of practice. if you, any of you are coming to the retreat with Keith Dalman, the Dzogchen retreat, we'll be practicing this 10 days. Consciousness without surface, without mishtach, without touching, without landing on anything. So consciousness, that's a place where the freedom, where consciousness is released. But the next place there is name and form, nama rupa. And it says nama, consciousness is a condition, is a determinant for nama rupa, body and mind. And it's worth saying here that body and mind in the Buddhist world, in the East, the whole of the East, are not two separate things. There are one thing. That's why nama rupa is together. It's always one word. Nama rupa, mind, body, physicality, mentality. I mean, it's obvious. Just our brain. If you think about a brain is physical. It's cells. And yet it's thought, it's mentality, it's just the same thing. You can't separate the thought out of the brain. The brain, the physical, mental, everywhere. Same with the mind, the body. We only know we have a body because of mind. We're actually not looking at the body. It's the mind looking at the mind. When we meditate on the body, we're meditating on mind looking at mind through the body. Because otherwise, we don't know we have a body except for the mind looking at, seeing we have a body. They're totally integrated. Nama is really description, knowing things, defining things, naming. Nama, name, is the same word. Recognition, it's also, in a way, the life force. It's many things. It's the force of life, prana, chi energy. And rupa is more physical, usually defined in the Eastern way as the elements. Earth, air, fire, water, which is kind of the basis of physical reality, and not just Buddhists, the whole of the Eastern world. But the nama rupa is really also the world, because there really isn't a world separate from an observer. So nama rupa is the world that we know. Physicality is not. The body is made of physical stuff, and there is no physical stuff. The body and earth, air, fire, water is everything. So nama rupa is the world and us at the same time. Nama is naming the world and us. Naming what? Naming a tree. The tree and me are one thing. So nama rupa is the world and the mind body at the same time. And indeed, you know, just the same we were talking before. Consciousness coming into a baby makes a living being. So consciousness is animating, making nama rupa. Consciousness creating nama rupa, a being, a body, mind. Consciousness arriving, pulled by sankharas or pushed by sankharas into a baby, and the baby, like I said, as long as it's not a placenta, it's a baby, and the baby's alive and well, hopefully. But name and form, nama rupa, is entirely influenced by consciousness in that Paticca Samuppada way. It's totally influenced by consciousness. And I remember, as a boy, I was fascinated by the Jungle Book, the stories of Mowgli, by Rudyard Kipling. And what was fascinating for me was the way that, because Mowgli's parents, Ke'ilu, were wolves, Zevim, they brought him up. So he thought he was a wolf. So all his mental structure was wolf. And he was walking around on like a wolf. So his mind and body were wolf, not human. So he was a wolf, because he was told that he was a wolf. So therefore, I am a Stephen because I'm told I'm Stephen. But it's just an accident, it's just dumb. There's not a real, you know. As a boy, I was fascinated by the fact that the whole thing is dumb like that. It was extraordinary revelation for me. I was blown out by it as a kid. Small kid, 6, 7 years old, I remember it so well. So it's really just dumb like that, you know. It was such an extraordinary realization. Because people tell me I'm Stephen, so I'm Stephen. But that means if they told me something else, I'd be something else. So what am I? It was really powerful as a kid, I remember. And we're like that. Consciousness tells us we are like this, so we become like that. Therefore, consciousness leading to Namarupa. A name and form. On the experience level, we can see this moment by moment, that what we see is what interests us, is what we become, what we define about ourselves, how we build ourselves and our life. The example of the football match. And the two are very intimate. In the consciousness and name and form, nama rupa, are all the time, it's not going in one direction. Name and form influences consciousness. Consciousness influences name and form, nama rupa, and the images of two sheaves of wheat, one leaning on the other. If you take one away, they fall down. So that one supports the other. So consciousness and nama rupa support each other constantly. So it's definitely not one way, it's two ways all the time. One leading to the other, one leading to the other. One holding the other. The final image that I want to express is an image also from the tradition. Maybe it's been developed a bit, that nama rupa, that is the world, the image is like a city. Me and the world like a city, the world. And there is a king. And the king is the consciousness. He sits in a castle, the body. King sits in the castle, rather closed by sankharas. It's got walls. And there's a small window. And through the window flies a bird. And the bird has two wings. One wing is samatha. That means quiet, concentration, samadhi. And the other wing is vipassana. Comes in through a small window and wakens the consciousness. Brings some freedom to the consciousness. Tells the consciousness there's a way out of this. There's a place out of your castle, prison. Okay, so I think we'll leave it at that and take a moment of quietness.